My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Paratalk. I'm Gareth Davis, and once again, I'm joined by paranormal enthusiast Mr. Reeves Cook. This week, we're talking about a very strange UFO encounter. This is called the Robert Taylor incident. Now, Reeves, this is a case that I remember from my childhood, seeing this on television. Tell us a little bit about this.
Very bizarre incident to Robert Taylor back in 1979.
I remember seeing this on the, I think it was a news program. You know, it was the whole UFO thing, the whole UFO vibe going on. An individual, Robert Taylor, forester, that was his job. His job, it was more of a keeper of an area.
Like a groundskeeper
a groundsman, that kind of job.
Right.
And now, at the time, his duties as a forester was to basically look after a particular area. Now, before we go on and start to talk about his job and how he got into this strange encounter, just want to give people a little bit of background of where this happened. Now, it is up in Scotland. Now, if listeners remember, we talked about the Falkirk Triangle some time ago.
Right.
Now, this is in Livingstone, West Lothian. That was his kind of area where he worked. Just a normal day, he sets out with his dog. One of his jobs is to just basically do a kind of a once round a check. All the gates are closed. You know, everything's fine. Nothing strange is happening. So he's out on his own and he's doing his in his van, and he drives up to the wooded area, which is a long kind of winding road which leads to a forest, parks his van, and then he proceeds on foot into the forest area. And he bears this corner into a large open area. So let me try and put a picture into our listeners' mind that when you sometimes go into the woods, you normally get areas that are where they've kind of deforested a particular area. Do you follow?
Yeah, but his dog was with him also, right? Was he completely alone, or was he with his dog?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it was a red setter. So he had his dog with him. At the time, before his experience, the animal didn't show any strange signs of being frightened or alarmed or anything like that.
Right. So he's for him, it's just a regular day at work.
He
parks the car, gets out with the dog. He's walking into a clearing in the forest. And what happens next?
Something very strange. Very strange. Well, of course.
Well, beyond strange. This is truly, truly bizarre. I mean, what Reeves is about to tell you folks is it's a real head scratcher, but this entire story reeks of authenticity.
So he's got his dog. He walks around the corner. I think his dog at that point decides to run off. He goes for a little scamper somewhere. Now, I'm not too sure if the animal was alarmed or it's just being a dog and running around like dogs do. But he rounds this corner into this deforested area, which is a big open area. And before his eyes, he witnesses this hovering ball, this what to him looks like metallic ball. Now, to give our listeners an idea of what the size is, he recalls approximately it was around 18 to 20 feet in diameter,
and about 12 feet high. So a fair size. To him, he said it didn't look like it was landed. It looked like it was hovering. It was made of, the reason he says metallic is because he said that the outside of this dome-shaped object with a brim around the middle, the reason he said it looked metal is because it had a rough sandboard matte finish to it. One of the interesting things that he did say, which in a lot of sightings that other people have experienced strange things, he said that the craft seemed to change shape, to be shimmering, not quite solid.
This is an interesting aspect of this case, which does tie into many other encounters, especially in the 1950s, which is like the yep. golden age of UFO encounters. I remember, and this may be something that we should pursue in a future episode of Paratalk, where I remember George Adamski, the famous contactee, he had a film, an 8mm film from a cine camera of a classic UFO shape, the standard saucer shape, flying, and something very similar to what Robert Taylor was describing was happening. This thing was shimmering and changing shape. And looking at that film, and I don't know if you've seen this, I would assume you have.
Yeah, I have.
It's film, it was the mid-1950s.
Yeah.
For this to be faked, while not impossible, would be extremely difficult.
Mm. Yeah, certainly certainly, there's a lot of experiences out there that have individuals that have these strange experiences. There are some say that especially when they come up to have a close encounter, shall we say, they note that sometimes, not always, but sometimes they either feel disorientated.
Yes, yes.
Or that the craft is in some way not quite solid, but semi-transparent.
Yeah, you get this a lot where people feel kind of out of it.
Off. Was it mildly drunk?
Yeah, the UFO researcher Jenny Randles, she talks about this in a lot of her books, and she calls it the Oz factor. And she calls it the Oz factor, the O-Z, from like Dorothy going to Oz. It's a very, you feel kind of detached from regular physical reality. And you get that a lot.
Let's jump back to Mr. Okay. Taylor's experience.
Right.
He's standing there. He's looking at, well, he doesn't know what he's looking at. He's looking at something. It's not making any sound.
Yeah.
It's just there. Now, all of a sudden, these two smaller spheres drop from below the craft, but they're like large, round balls.
Yeah. I think the best way he described them is that they looked very similar to sea mines. You know, like a mine at sea.
Yeah.
Those like a ball with those spikes coming off them.
Yeah.
He said they were very similar to that.
Yeah. And they obviously had the spiked legs, the legs coming out.
Yeah.
They made a beeline for him. And as they approached him, he was, I think, really in his state, frozen with fear.
Yeah.
To be honest. I mean, putting myself in that position, I think anyone, even if you wanted to run away, I don't think you would have the ability to run away because
sure.
you'd be so transfixed by what you were seeing and experiencing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know what to do. It's just one of those things. It's a human condition. You see a car accident. You don't want to look, but you do look.
Yeah.
It's that kind of, you're fixed to the spot.
Can't move. Yeah, you're transferred.
These two objects came from the craft, apparently, according to his testimony, and they made a beeline for him, one either side of him. He noticed a smell, an acrid smell,
yeah,
which was quite putrid. It made him feel quite nauseous and also quite faint, but not to the point of at that point to lose consciousness.
Yeah.
It just was a horrible smell. These objects came either side of him. He felt them hit his lower part of his body, and then according to his testimony, he lost consciousness.
But they rubbed up against his legs, right? They hit his legs like just below his pockets on his pants.
Yeah.
These two spheres.
And he lost consciousness, totally out of it, for around 20 minutes.
Right.
Now, 20 minutes later, he regained consciousness.
He still could smell this putrid smell.
Yeah.
He looked over to where the object was. It was no longer there. Just a clear outcrop
right.
area, which it would normally be. He then tried to stand up. He found that he had a very hard time physically getting up. He had no energy.
Yeah.
His legs, it was like his legs were numb. They wouldn't work. So he crawled through the woodland, the wooded area and the path, approximately about 300 feet, back to his van. By this time, his dog was with him, and it was acting very strange. The dog was barking, running around. It seemed very distressed, but it stayed with him. It was by him, you know, as he made his way back
okay.
to his vehicle. Found it very difficult to, once he did crawl back to his vehicle, he tried to stand, and he was able to stand up using the vehicle as support. He got into the vehicle
yeah.
and tried to drive it. But unfortunately, he only didn't get very far and ended up driving it into a ditch.
Okay, so he was still kind of out of it. He was still kind of, he wasn't 100%.
Yeah. He couldn't get the vehicle out of the ditch
right.
because what had happened is one of the wheels had got stuck in like a mud hole.
Okay.
And he couldn't get the vehicle out. So his only option was to walk the mile back to his house to get some help.
Yeah.
He did have a two-way radio on him.
Okay.
Which was a radio to his employer, the forestry employer, but he couldn't talk. He wasn't able to.
So this thing messed him up then badly. He couldn't function correctly.
It really did mess him up. He wasn't able to make any words. He tried to, but he could hear them asking, you know, he couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
So he kind of staggered, a kind of a drunken walk, back to a mile back to his house.
Yeah.
When he got home, I think his employer called round, and also his wife had returned home. His employer asked him what had happened, and by this time, he'd had a wash, he'd had a bath, he'd freshened up, he'd got to his senses a little bit back. He explained what had happened. His wife had come home and said, you know, she'd asked a doctor to come round, a family doctor. He came round and gave him a basic examination. Right. Did find some oddities on him. He found that his trousers, it was only later when he'd returned home that he'd noticed his trousers had these strange tear marks.
So they were torn by those,
below the hips.
Those two spheres that came out towards him then.
Yeah, so whatever it was, that had come toward him
yeah.
had obviously tried to grab his material on his trousers
yeah.
and underneath his trousers he was wearing these, well, I think they call them long johns, but they're like thermal
right
thermal
right
like trouser things.
Yeah, I got you.
They had gone through that as well and torn that, and they'd also left marks on his legs, like little scratch marks on his legs. He also had a cut mark under his chin. But that could have been caused by him collapsing or him crawling through the undergrowth to try and get back to his van because he wasn't able to stand. So he was kind of walking like crawling like a baby because he didn't have the energy to stand. So he could have easily cut his chin, but more hard to explain the cuts under his clothing, which were in the same area as the cut marks in his trousers and his underclothes. The doctor examined him, said that, okay, well, we're going to make an appointment with you at the hospital for an x-ray just to make sure that you've got nothing going on to cause you to pass out, to have an hallucination, to have a fit, that kind of thing. So he decided with his employer that he wanted to go back to the area to investigate what was going on.
Let me just ask you this real quickly, though, Reeves, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but you might have an answer. Was there any missing time? In other words, you know, from the time he passed out to the time he woke up, was it like just 20 minutes or was several hours missing or something like that?
Not that I'm aware of. Apparently, according to the testimonies, he passed out they made a timeline of the events when they took place.
Yeah.
He was there about 9 o'clock in the morning. He did his route. He started to do his round through the woods and checking the fences and gates. It was soon at the beginning of his round that he allegedly encountered this object which assaulted him. He lost consciousness, woke up
around sort of 10 o'clock-ish, it must have been. And then by the time he got home, it was just after 11 o'clock in the morning.
Well, let me just touch on something here, because I really want to get into the object itself, and then we'll talk about what happened when he goes back there. I have his description here in front of me. I'd like to read it. He said that it was a large circular object, spheroid in shape, and approximately 20 feet, which is 6 meters in diameter, and hovering above the forest floor. The object had a narrow rim running along its circumference with stems topped with propellers, and the surface of the object appeared to be constructed of a dark metallic material which appeared transparent in places. He later described that the surface of the object was having a texture similar to that of sandpaper, and suggested that by having transparent areas on the surface, the object was attempting to camouflage itself with its surroundings.
If we go forward to later UFO accounts, people often say that one minute it's there, the next minute it's just gone.
Well, that's the telling part here, and I think he might be onto something, that this object was attempting to camouflage. It was attempting to blend into the background, so he had it succeeded, he would have walked into that area, and
it would have looked and nothing.
He would have done his whatever he needed to do and left, and that would have been the end of that. He would have no knowledge or any idea that this 20-foot object was in the field.
I like to be quite logical when I review these accounts, because although they're incredibly interesting, and I find them interesting, of course, you know, our listeners find them interesting. I like to look at it with a kind of a logical head. But we could step out and say, well, if this object was really, really real, it really did happen. And there's no other reason to say it didn't happen. Okay, I'm not saying it didn't happen. But that object may have been a probe.
Sure.
Was sent from who knows where.
Yeah.
And those objects that came out were its defense mechanism.
Exactly.
And that smell that he smelt was
some kind of anesthetic.
To knock him out.
Right. Okay, before we go back to the next phase of this amazing story.
Yeah.
Let's take a real quick break.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Paratalk.
And we're back. Okay, Reeve. So when we left off, Robert Taylor got home. He was examined by the doctor. They found his pants were torn. There were strange marks on his body. But he wanted to go back to the area. So what happened next?
Well, he made a trip back with his employer, because obviously the employer wanted to know what was going on. And they did actually find remnants of, in the exact area where he had his experience, they found evidence.
So
something had been there.
What kind of evidence did they find when they went back and examined the area?
When they went back to examine the area, they found what I can only describe as where the large object was sitting. They found these ladder track marks, like lines
in the ground, like lines in the ground,
embedded in the ground.
Okay. Yeah,
like something had pushed down into the ground. There was like a grid mark, like side by side.
Right.
Now these objects were about 2.5 meters in length. That's about just over 8 feet.
Okay.
Lengthy one. There were also around that area and around the area where the object was, there were also small indentations, approximately 40 of them, which were about 4 inches across. They conclude that these indentations are the indentations that were left
by the rolling objects that came out of the craft.
It says they rolled towards him.
Towards him,
right?
And these were the impressions that were left from him being attacked.
Yeah.
When they returned home, because obviously he now saw that there was something going on. The employer decided to get other foresters to fence the area off.
So okay,
closing up from the public,
so that the evidence wouldn't be disturbed.
Exactly. So when he got home, his wife had already informed the police. The police came and they started to treat it as a real assault case, that he'd been assaulted.
Okay.
So they actually came in then and went to the area to investigate.
Yeah.
When they got there, they did a full investigation. They also took his trousers and his undergarments to be forensically examined. One interesting thing that the forensic scientist did find was the tears on the trousers. If you can imagine, if you caught your... See, some people with a skeptical viewpoint who want to have their opinion across and that is it, said that after he'd fallen from whatever, maybe an hallucination or an epileptic fit, that some people, after they have a fit, if it's a bad one, they can't speak and they don't have an ability to walk. Their body is totally drained.
Right.
Now, what they're suggesting is that he must have caught his trousers on some random twigs or branches or...
Like when he was out of it or something, he must have brushed against something. Yeah.
Very unlikely, logically very unlikely, because the tears either side are around the same place, and the tears are they're identical. They start from the bottom and they tear up to about 5 inches in length.
Right.
And both of the tears are about the same width as well. So that would tell me that whatever grabbed his trousers was either side was the same instrument.
Yeah, because the tears were very similar and the same
very
height.
Similar. By this time, it was a Friday when he was out. A Friday. It was November the 9th, a Friday, that he had his encounter. By the Sunday, everybody knew. Everybody. Word had got out locally.
Yep.
There were loads of people in the area trying to get, dig up bits of earth, get their souvenirs, because it hit the papers. And if you remember, which I remember, it hit the British national news as well.
Well, I remember as a kid seeing this guy being interviewed at the spot where it happened. I remember seeing him in the field and the camera crew were there and he was saying, I remember him pointing, saying, it was right over there. And I was standing here and I came in and I saw it and the object was right there and pointing and the camera showing where this thing was in the field and him talking about it and then showing like an artist's illustration of the object and the two balls that came towards him and ripped his pants.
Yeah. Well, obviously the mainstream media got involved. The place was surrounded. So the police concluded, they did their investigation. The person that was involved, they couldn't find any further evidence as to what could have assaulted him. There was obviously evidence on the ground. We'll get into that in a second on the debunker skeptical side of things.
Yeah.
They did a full profile on him. They asked people about him, his personality. Everyone that was interviewed said that he was a genuine, hardworking kind of guy. He liked a beer. He liked to smoke. He wasn't known for lying or making stuff up. And really, if you think about it, even if he did make this up, what did he gain from it? Absolutely nothing. Well, a picture in the paper.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe 5 minutes on a television program.
It's a very well-known case. I mean, it's famous because...
It's the most famous case in Scottish UFO history.
Yeah. To me, it seems very, very real. It seems totally authentic. I mean, this guy, I don't think he's just an ordinary guy, right? He's not like, he's not making money from this. He's not, I mean, he's dead now, unfortunately. But it was just one of those things that happened. I think he was being honest. The way I look at it is like one of two things are going on here. He's either describing something that really honestly did happen in physical reality, and he's doing his best to describe some truly bizarre, a truly bizarre incident. Or it was a kind of massive hallucination, and he imagined the entire thing. I don't think lying or deception even comes into this picture at all. Not even close.
Well, he did have his enemies. He did have a number of people that would did their very utmost to discredit anything around this account, whether they were people that were employed by certain agencies to discredit him. But there were a lot of people out there that tried their best to discredit him.
Right.
Some people said that it was, you know, he made it up for to get on the telly, to get in, to make, you know, to get some, make some sort of money from it, which is ludicrous.
Yeah.
But the craziest one, okay, the craziest explanation that I've heard
is this the Doctor Who one.
And no, the craziest one I've heard was from an actual UFO. He's a researcher. I'm trying to recall his name, but he's more of a, he likes to give his own spin on things. And he thinks that what Mr. Taylor experienced was a mirage of the planet Venus, which had, under certain particular conditions, the Earth's atmosphere, because the sun lit it in a certain way, the upper atmosphere acted as a mirror lens, a camera lens, and the planet Venus at the time was quite prominent in the sky, and the light shining from Venus hit on the Earth and shone down to that area, and what he saw before him was a shimmering mirage of the planet Venus.
As soon as they bring Venus into it, dude, that's like swamp gas, you know. As soon as they say it's the planet Venus, you know that it's obvious bullshit.
I understand, but they actually put this theory towards practicing astronomers, people who know a lot about space and how planets work and things like that. I mean, it is documented. There have been mirages in the sky. That has happened. It's very rare. It's very rare. There was a case which was photographed years ago. I remember seeing it on, I think it was Arthur C. Clarke, where someone had actually photographed a city in the sky, but it was actually a mirage. It was a reflection from the ground off of cloud layers, and it looked like a shimmering...
Right, but
it wasn't. Those
are mirages in the sky. This thing was on the ground.
Yeah, this guy was basically saying that the planet Venus was projected some way to this area, and that's what he saw, and that's why it looked transparent. The astronomers have been asked about this, and they say for the conditions to appear, for that to happen, it would be just so rare that it's likely it would never happen.
My favorite theory for this is a theory by author David Slater. And he said that Taylor's experience may have been caused by deadly nightshade, which grew fairly common in that area. It was a deadly nightshade-induced hallucination that triggered memories of a recently aired Doctor Who episode, which featured a spaceship of very similar appearance and design.
Well, I find theories like that interesting as well, because if he's not the only person that is in this area, why aren't other foresters having other hallucinations in similar areas where the nightshade also grows? Might not
right,
be
no,
the same
I, sort I,
of
I
hallucination,
agree.
But, you know. But I find his this story account, I'm calling it a story, it's an account, I find all the things that happened to him, so nothing's kind of blown out of proportion. You know, obviously he's not around anymore. So there was a documentary made a few years before his death. You can clearly see he's not a well man. He recalls it the same as what obviously the day when he experienced it. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that do experience these things, but a lot of them don't talk about it because they know that, I mean, Robert Taylor actually moved away from the area because he was so tired. Did you make this up?
Yeah, he stuck the story to his dying day that it really happened to him. I mean, that was his one and only experience like this. He never said, you know, and then 6 months later, the Space Brothers came to speak with me, or, you know, that this happened to him. Nothing before and nothing after, just this one incident. And he claimed until his dying day that it really happened. He was being completely honest with what is his description of what took place.
They did actually put a a small plaque in the area to commemorate his experience in the forest, in the clearing, because the clearing is obviously still there. It's not as big as it used to be, but the clearing is still there. And there was a small stone with a plaque, embedded plaque, but the plaque got stolen so many times that they stopped replacing it.
Why would you steal that? That's bizarre.
Oh. You know?
But yeah, this is this is one of those cases that, from my perspective, is 100% true. I see nothing in this case whatsoever that would lead to hoax, deception, trickery, lying, or anything like that. This case, for me, is an honest. He's telling the truth. Taylor is being completely honest. He experienced something incredibly strange and bizarre and tried to the best of his ability to relate to what happened to him.
Mm. And it's something I certainly want to experience.
Yeah, I know. It seems pretty scary. All right, Reeves, thank you so much. Another great, great story here on Paratalk, and we'll be back very soon with more Paratalk.
It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. And there's no better time to score big savings on unforgettable gifts. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air-chilled chicken, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. Don't wait. Shop now to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select packages at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.